Hi, I'm Shadow Stevens. While I'm doing this and that and the other thing at the very same time, I'm having a great time on The Jeremiah Show, the greatest show in the history of the world. For the love of God, subscribe. No, seriously, subscribe.
It's The Jeremiah Show. Tearing back the curtain on music icons, pop culture, and food gods, we're bringing you the hottest guests from around the globe with your music business authority, LA personal development commentator, Mike Gormley. The Jeremiah Show is sound designed by master sound engineer, Dr. D. He's a restaurant and bar fixer. He's opened and fixed over 200 restaurants, bars, and hotels. He's a partner with legendary drummer Mick Fleetwood from Fleetwood Mac in Fleetwood's on Front Street in Maui. And he's your radio host. Step aside, Superman, from A Race Around the Sun, Jeremiah.
Welcome the legendary Count Basie Orchestra, directed by Scotty Barnhart.
Welcome to the show. I have a very special co-host today. I'm really happy to announce that Adam Phillips agreed to do the show with me. He's a good longtime friend of the show, but he's also founder and music director of the Folk Orchestra Santa Barbara. And you've had a little bit of a break there, Adam. We can't wait to have the Folk Orchestra play again and even rehearse, which is so much fun. If you've ever seen Adam and his orchestra rehearse, they rehearse in these great, they were at Telegraph, these great locations, Telegraph Brewery for a little while. So they were among the whole orchestra, among the kegs, which was very cool, and the brewing equipment. And then you now. Sorry, Adam. Were you just agreeing with me that that?
Oh, and I said, and oh yeah, and I was saying in the brewing equipment and making all sorts of weird noises.
they were unofficially part of the orchestra, huh? the process
sound effects.
Our winery for a long time, and then you were again now under these great wine barrels, and. The orchestra played there. So
yeah, it was a cool setting right up until the pandemic. We were at Carr Winery, and it was beautiful in there. And so we'll be back eventually.
Do you think you'll go back to Carr Winery, or are you looking for a new location?
We will once things are a little more back to normal. Right now, we're just kind of taking it easy and just rehearsing with us. And then eventually, as you know, things are a little more stable pandemic-wise, we'll be back to being able to rehearse at the winery. It'll be nice.
Yeah, we look forward to that. And also some music this fall. So again, Adam, just to recap, if you're just joining us, is the founder and the music director of the Folk Orchestra of Santa Barbara. And the Folk Orchestra is a local ensemble full of the area's best musicians playing folk and classical music. The 30-piece ensemble features bagpipes, mandolins, acoustic guitars, Irish whistles, harp, the flute, and a full contingent of classical strings, violins, violas, cellos, and double bass. So you can find the Folk Orchestra on Folk Orchestra SB and on Facebook. That's on Instagram. And then on Facebook, you can find them at Folk Orchestra SB. October 16th and 17th, Adam, you guys have got a concert, a Scottish concert. And
yeah, we got our... we usually do it at the end of the year. This year, we're doing it a little bit earlier. And... you know, it's with the full Highland pipes and the Celtic harp, and we're doing some beautiful, well-known Scottish tunes, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and it'll be at Casa de la Guerra, so kind of out in the open, but in that beautiful old Spanish villa, and underneath the starlight. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful. And then after that, on December 18th and 19th, you've got a holiday and solstice show. So mark your calendars and go see Adam and the Folk Orchestra of Santa Barbara. So Adam, I called up Adam, and we, like I said, we've known each other for a long time. He's been on the show a few times, and I had the opportunity to speak with our special guest today, Scotty Barnhart. He is the director of the Count Basie Orchestra. So Adam agreed to join me with this really great interview. Yeah, just together, I think we're gonna really get to know Scotty Barnhart very well over the next hour and listen to the the Count Basie Orchestra live at Birdland. It comes out on September 17th. We're going to talk all about that with Scotty. But first, I just wanted to say the Count Basie Orchestra is really special to me for one really important reason. My grandmother, who passed away a few years ago, Ida Peralt, loved the Glenn Miller Band, and she loved Count Basie Orchestra. And she got her first iPhone. And so for her birthday, I loaded up into her music playlists the Count Basie Orchestra, everything I could find. And so today, this is for my grandmother, Ida Peralt, and I'm so thrilled, so honored to have Scotty Barnhart on today to talk about being the director for, God, I think it's 18 years now, or been in the band.
No, 8 years. 8 years.
8 years.
8 years.
And you've been in the band how many years, though? 18,
is 28. 28.
Wow, I swear. Two of those. I just should have added them. Well, so let me, before we get in, before we introduced Scotty, who you just heard, let me tell you a little bit about him and the Count Basie Orchestra to set this up. So in the history of jazz music, there is only one band leader that has the distinction of having his orchestra still performing sold-out concerts all over the world with members personally chosen by him for over 30 years after his passing. Pianist and band leader William James Count Basie was and still is an American institution that personifies the grandeur and the excellence of jazz. The Count Basie Orchestra, today directed by Scotty Barnhart, has won every respected jazz poll in the world at least once. They've won 18 Grammy Awards, performed for kings and queens and other world royalty. They've appeared in several movies, television shows, at every major jazz festival and major concert hall in the world. Again, the Count Basie Orchestra is directed by our special guest today, Scotty Barnhart. And let me tell you a little bit about Scotty Barnhart. He's very accomplished. He's an internationally acclaimed jazz trumpeter, composer, an arranger, an educator, an author, and again, the director of the legendary Count Basie Orchestra. He's a featured trumpet soloist with orchestra for over 20 years. He's a two-time Grammy Award winner, appearing on three critically acclaimed recordings with pianist Marcus Roberts and over 15 others, with artists as diverse as Diana Krall, Ray Charles, and Tito Puente. He was also the trumpeter for the Marcus Roberts Quintet in the late 80s and early 90s. And he garnered critical acclaim for his playing and the sound of which the New York Times wrote of Barnhart. Scotty Barnhart bears watching, laid out assured melodic lines in a singing silvery tone. He's also performed or recorded with Frank Sinatra, Wynton Marsalis, Herbie Hancock, Quincy Jones, the Duke Ellington Orchestra, Ray Brown, Take Six, Lena Horne, Aretha Franklin, Natalie Cole, George Benson, and Barbara Streisand, among many others. Additionally, Scotty has performed at the Academy Awards. And in April of 2008, Unity Music signed Scotty to his first recording contract as a leader, and they released his long-anticipated debut CD, Say It Plain, to critical acclaim on May 19, 2009. Got an unprecedented lineup of musicians appearing with Scotty on his solo recording are Wynton Marsalis, Clark Terry, Ellis Marsalis, Marcus Roberts, Erlen Riley, Todd Williams, Leon Anderson Jr., and Bill Peterson, and also the great Rodney Jordan. That album reached number 3 on the jazz charts. Scotty Barnhart is a graduate of Florida A&M University with a degree in music education. He is profiled in the book Trumpet Kings, which places him with the most important jazz trumpeters in our history, from Louis Armstrong to Miles Davis and others. Welcome to the show, Scotty Barnhart.
Thank you, man. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
It's our honor all the way. Adam and I are so happy to meet you and to have a little time with you today.
Yeah, nice to meet you guys too. Adam and Jeremiah, both very nice to meet you guys, man. Really. My pleasure.
Well, I want to tell... Man, could you... Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. It's just great. Scotty, I mean, it sounds like you have all this talent. Could you just get some work done?
I'm busy, man. You haven't been doing anything. Working hard, man.
Yeah.
I got to tell a quick story of, you know, yesterday we had this interview scheduled yesterday, and I couldn't get the audio to work. You know, it just happens once in a while, and it happened yesterday, of course. And I'm normally calm and not anxious, and I was stressed out, really was stressed. And Scotty turns around at his office there. He's got this big, beautiful piano behind him, and he turns around and he starts playing music for me. I don't know if it's for
him. Oh, yeah.
It was calming. Yeah. It was just beautiful. I feel like I was at home yesterday.
I was at home yesterday. That was my home grand piano. I'm in my office here at FSU now. So I have a grand piano at home too. Yeah, piano is my second instrument, so I'm always around one.
I could listen to you play all day long. It was great.
Cool, man.
I watched that video of you playing on Oscar Peterson's piano.
Oh yeah.
That must have been awesome. Man, you sounded so good.
I was just
so smooth.
Man, look, I was just nervous going to his house, although he had passed away, but driving up in his driveway, you know, with his wife Kelly, who's a dear friend of mine, and we walk into the house, and she's and after a few minutes she said, "I know you want to see it." We walk downstairs, man, and there it is, this big studio, man. I about had a heart attack, man. So when I sat down to play, man, I didn't know she had grabbed my phone or her phone and was recording. I didn't know she was doing that. I'm just playing and getting used to what it sounded like. Yeah. And I mean, that's one of the greatest thrills of my life. And I met him just once back in 95 or 96. And but to be at his house playing his piano, his personal piano, man, that pinched myself.
Well, we're recording this on YouTube as well, if you'd like to watch the interview that way. You won't hear music, but it's nice to watch it as well. But I'm sitting between two great orchestra leaders here, and they've got music instruments on their walls. I think I need at least one behind me.
You gotta have something. Yeah, put a bugle back there or something, man. Or kazoo or something.
Live at Birdland with the Count Basie Orchestra. I'm going to let you tell the story, Scotty, but let me just set it up a little bit here. In 1929, 25-year-old Bill Basie, or William James Count Basie, found himself in Chicago making his first recording as an arranger and a part-time pianist for the Benny Moten Orchestra. So take it from there, Scotty. Tell us about this, where it went from there, where Basie went from there.
Well, he started performing and recording with Benny Moten's orchestra. Benny Moten was a pianist, as well as the band leader. And Basie sort of, he says, finagled his way into Mr. Moulton's orchestra and ended up becoming the second pianist and arranger. You know, he did some arrangements for Mr. Moulton. And so he did such a good job that, you know, about when Mr. Moulton died in 1935, there was only one guy that the guy, other musicians looked to take up where he had left off, take the musicians and start his own orchestra. And that's what happened. So he gathered the musicians around, and he was a clear leader. And he started, you know, performing under his own name with some of those same arrangements and same musicians. And that's how the Count Basie Orchestra was born. And here we are 87 years later, still going.
It's incredible. The when he connived or worked his way into the band, as he says, does that happen a lot?
No, no, not today. No, back in those days, I mean, the musicians were. It was just a different time, yeah. You know. The music was really at its in its infancy stages, so there was a lot more. The only term that comes to mind right now is cross pollination. There was a lot more instances where you would have one musician, he could be in five different bands. You know, we don't really have that today. And so that's why he kind of figured that's why he kind of put it like that. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And, you know, he talked his way, talked to the right person, or the right person heard him play and said, yeah, you should come on and join Moulton's band. Although Mr. Moulton was a pianist. So that shows you that although Mr. Leader was a pianist, he still had room for another pianist. You know, somebody that was very talented and somebody obviously who had great leadership qualities and had an affable personality. People always wanted to be around Basie. That's one thing I keep hearing all the time. People wanted to be around him, and which is why I think people still want to hear his orchestra, and which is why we're treated like royalty wherever we go, man. That's all because of him. His personality, it wasn't abrasive. I mean, you can't find anyone that has anything negative to say about him. I mean, ever. I'm talking about from people that was in his band for 57 years, man. I talked to those guys, and you know, some of them I played with, like the late Bill Hughes. Everybody loved Basie. Wow. And I think what people are understanding now is that he was a master psychologist. And you have to be to lead an orchestra that long and not have any really serious issues, never in the newspaper once about some problem or, you know, whatever. You've got to be able to have a master, almost a PhD in psychology to manage 17, 18 guys from the age of 25 to 75 or whatever it may be, you know? So the more years go by, the more I think people are really starting to realize that he indeed was the greatest band leader to ever live, man. I mean, we're still going.
Yeah.
I mean, and the funny thing about that, it's like Miles Davis and John Coltrane. Even when they aren't soloing, you know that's their group. You can put on a Train record after he soloed. He's not even playing. And you can listen, oh, that's Train. Well, yeah. Same thing with Miles. Same thing with Basie. Ellington, too. You know? And so he had his personality stamped on this orchestra, still has it stamped on it, that it's just my job to make sure we still continue to do the things that he did. The right music at the right tempo. And the orchestra itself is the star. It's not one particular specific soloist. The entire organization, that's the product there. And which means that, so if personnel changes, doesn't really matter. You just have to get somebody as good as or better than that person that you're replacing, you know. And that's how the orchestra is able to keep going. So, again, my job, you know, when I first got here, man, I was just eyes open, mouth shut, ears open. I'm just looking and watching and observing and seeing what's going on and just trying to play my part. And but unbeknownst to me, as far as becoming the leader of it, the powers that be, Basie's son, who's our CEO at the time and our leader at the time, Frank Foster, had already been discussing me as the leader. I had no idea about that until they told me. And then I realized, oh, okay, yeah, I guess that is what I'm supposed to be doing at some point, you know. So I had a good 20-year apprenticeship, so to speak, under three or four different leaders to really understand what this orchestra was about, understand how to continue Mr. Basie's legacy in the right way. And to know that when I leave my house nowadays, I don't just leave my house as Scotty Barnhart. I leave my house representing Mr. Basie, no matter where I go, whether it's going on tour, just taking a plane somewhere around, no matter where it is, man, I'm representing him, and I'm saying that. So I try to do him proud, you know, think of what he would do. And I think, funny, oddly enough, now that I think about it, our personalities are very similar. I'm a people person. He was a people person. I'm an optimist, perpetual optimist. I think he was a perpetual optimist. I seemingly can solve problems quickly without them getting to a point where they escalate. This is why they appointed me the union rep years ago and the band spokesman and the mediator. I can figure out how to, you know, so he was like that. So I think it's a trip when I look at why I'm here. And sometimes those things aren't an accident. You know, I was put on this planet to do what I'm doing. I've always believed that. Everybody, I think, is put on this planet has a very specific purpose. That I knew mine was to lead this orchestra years ago. I just knew that. I just knew it. I don't know how I knew it. I just knew. Okay, I'm supposed to be doing that. I'm supposed to protect this man's legacy. I'm supposed to try to ensure that it'll be around another 100 years from now. Just like the New York Philharmonic. New York Philharmonic started in 1852. What is this, 2021? And it's still going too? It's no different. No different, man. All you have to do is make sure you have the right people who are in charge and you play the right music. But in Basie's case, it's a personal sound that's still going after 87 years. That to me is just, I can't even tell you how important I think that is. That is a personal sound.
Could you describe that sound to, let's say there's some new young listeners that have not heard or don't know that they've heard Count Basie Orchestra.
Okay.
What is that sound? Because yesterday when I was listening, I listened all day in my office to
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking, wow, 1929, mm-hmm. You know, when he started out and then through those times, they were tough times, almost like we're going mm-hmm. through a little bit right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the music is so optimistic and so high energy.
Oh, yeah.
Describe.
Well, the sound of it, first and foremost, it's a blues-based sound. That's first and foremost. This is a blues-based orchestra, which is why no other orchestra in history can play the blues how we play it. We can give you one that's completely gut bucket and from the, you know, back of town, whatever, all the way up to one by Thad Jones that we refer to as a Mensa level blues. You have to have an IQ of 150 to understand what's happening, because Thad's IQ was like that. So we can play this whole full spectrum of the blues, but that's the sound. Anything that we play, although the chart might not be a blues, so like a standard, like, I don't know, I can't give you anything but love, the one that I wrote. Although that's not a blues per se, what I did with the arrangement, I wrote it in such a way that you could feel the influence of the blues as I feel it, as I know it. That's what Basie did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the other thing to understand too is that the jazz orchestra is an extension of the gospel choir. And a lot of people forget that. A lot of my students here at FSU ask me over the years, well, why does the orchestra sound the way it sounds? Well, maybe because everybody in that band grew up in a Black Baptist church. Maybe that's why. And they went like me. So when I first heard Basie, I said, oh, that's the same thing I hear in church once a month, man, or every other week. Same thing. So if you understand the totality of the history of it, where the music comes from, and when you study something like that, it's best to not study it just starting with Count Basie when he began. Go back 30, 40 years before that. What led up to that? What made him go in that direction of playing the blues the way he was playing? It's all based on his personal experiences. So the Count Basie Orchestra sound is a blues-infused sound, but the key, though, is the guitar. That sound of the guitar mixed in the middle of the bass and the piano, that is what sets Basie's orchestra apart from other orchestras. Because most of the orchestras just have piano, bass, and drums. But when you add that extra acoustic instrument in there with strings and the sound of the guitar, you know, fused in, balanced just perfectly between the bass and the piano, that is the sound that Basie started and will always have. You know, and he, and Freddie Green, who began on, you know, actually Freddie Green wasn't the first guitarist. It was Claude Fiddler Williams who was the first guitarist. And when John Hammond got ready to take the band to New York, he figured he needed a new guitarist. That's why he got Freddie Green. And Freddie Green was there for 50 years. And he just really helped to shape the sound of the band. And I have to acknowledge the recording engineers over the years, man, because this is very important. They knew how to put that microphone in the right place as to not to have the guitar too loud or too soft. And I remember one night we were at the Blue Note, New York. This is 25 years ago. And we were playing a set, and George Benson was in the audience. You know, George is a good friend of mine, and And we came off the stage, and George said to me, "Hey, man, the guitar is too loud." And it wasn't my fault because the sound guy was the one back there dealing with the knobs. Yeah. So I went to the sound guy because I've been in charge of our sound since, you know, well, over 25 years now. And I told the sound guy, "Man, look, if you don't listen to our recordings, you're not going to know how to mix this. You've got to go listen to something." So I said, "Man, just go check out a bass recording." I told him what to go listen to and listen to where the guitar is in the mix. If you hear if you can hear every chord he's playing, he's too loud. That's what I had to tell him. Okay. Then he got it. Now, then he had it just right. So when you're sitting there listening, you can hear it. It's like you're sitting there when you're just sitting there by yourself. You can't hear yourself breathing until you think about it. You know you're breathing, but you're not listening to it. You maybe concentrate, you know?
Yeah.
I can't hear myself breathing. That's kind of how the guitar balance is with this orchestra. So, again, blues-based sound, blues-infused sound that comes out of the gospel choir. It comes out of spirituals, all of that's in there. And then he was lucky enough to have guys that grew up in their churches in their respective hometowns listening to the same type of gospel music and spirituals and everything. So, I mean, his orchestra would have sounded completely different had everyone in his band grown up in a Catholic church. Let's just be frank. It wouldn't sound the same. It just wouldn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, the fact that he had those guys that understood that, come out of the sanctified church. A lot of people, and I tell my students too, man, go to a church in town one Sunday, just check out the choir, man. Some students haven't even done that. And they wonder why we sound how we sound. Go to a gospel choir, go to a rehearsal. You don't have to go to church. And just go check them out. You'll hear Basie, you'll hear Ellington, you hear all of that in there, man. So when Basie started, he brought all of those elements with him. And as he went through the years and the decades of playing, he never lost sight of that. He never let an arranger's ideas eclipse his own ideas of what he knew was best for his orchestra. This is why he only had 5 to 10 people to write for him. People still send me stuff now today. We can't play everything somebody sends me just because we're the Basie orchestra and they want to get their arrangement heard. No, man, it has to be right. It has to, the horns have to, the rhythms have to be right. It's just, you just don't play anything. And even as great as Quincy was, Frank Foster, Neil Hefti, Sam Mestigo, all these great arrangers, Basie had the last word. He would take stuff out, change stuff around, take that whole section out. Letter D, take that out. You're not even going to play that. And he would do that, and the arrangers respected him. So, okay, yes, sir. And what he taught them, now that's really interesting. Basie taught arrangers how to write for him. That's a deep thing, man. He taught them, like Lil Darlin, which is the greatest big band ballad probably of all time. When Neil Hefti wrote that, he didn't write that as a ballad. He wrote that up-tempo. Basie heard that and said, nope, put it right here. Rest is history, man.
Wow.
The rest is history. So I'm telling you, Mr. Basie, man, this cat boy, ooh, my goodness, man. He was a genius.
You take that on, though. Is that a heavy weight that you walk out the door, you know, and I'm representing the orchestra, and then knowing you have to continue what you've just described, right? You have to think someone, or do you feel like you think like him almost naturally that you're in sync one?
I think it's natural, man, but I think it's natural because I don't consciously think of, oh, let me do what Basie would have done. The things that I've done that I did leading up to that were already things that he would have done. Studying every section, knowing every tempo, having every single record the band ever put out. I got all of that stuff, but I was doing that already before I got to Basie. I didn't get in the orchestra and all of a sudden, let me go learn the history. No, man, I was already learning that in high school, man. So by the time I got the call to join, it was a natural progression, which is why on the first note, after the first night, after the first tune we played, the cat next to me said, oh, man, you're in. I was great to hear that, but I wasn't surprised. Because I knew what we were doing. I knew the music. I knew the guys' names in the band before I got there because I was studying them on the album cover, man. Like, oh, he's on trumpet on this record, but on this record, he's not on the trumpet. You know, I was doing that stuff in high school, man.
Everything.
And so I saw the orchestra twice in high school. So I think all of the things that I did, all of the things I started to do once I got to the orchestra, becoming the busiest guy there doing the sound, I was a union rep, all of the stuff I was doing, it was just natural. Nobody had to ask me to do that stuff. I was volunteering for most of it. If they needed somebody to do something, I'd do it. No problem. Need somebody to get up at 7 o'clock to do a radio interview, I'd do it. And all those things just kind of led, you know, to where I am.
Well, let's go into the album, the first album, Live Recording at Birdland. Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. 1961, Birdland. Yeah. Live recording from that night has been called simply the best live recording of a big band ever. Basie, the orchestra and Basie, he regarded Birdland as almost like his musical home. Is that right? And why?
Yeah, that's right. And it's kind of like becoming that for us again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Because I think he would play. I think he had a standing engagement, a total of about a month, a year, I think, a few weeks at a time or whatever, you know, like, for example, all of December, stuff like that.
Okay.
They would do that. And, you know, all of the guys would be at home and you were comfortable. And the audiences were the main part of it, because the people were right in front of you. I mean, you can reach out and touch them, which is what we love. You know, we play great concert halls. We love that too. But when the audience members are right there, you can look them in the eye, you can watch them patting their foot, snapping their finger. Man, we love that, because that's what it's for. The music is supposed to, you know, elevate people's condition, no matter what they're going through, even if it's great stuff they're going through, even ever elevate that. You know what I mean? Put a period on that. So we love playing Birdland. So, and I knew we just needed to do recordings. So I talked about it with the owner Gianni for at least 2 or 3 years. I said, man, you need to record it, man. You know that, don't you? So we just kept talking and kept talking. Finally, we got into a position where we could plan it, and we made it happen. And it sounds unbelievable, man. I was just listening to it in the car driving up here.
Yeah.
So,
unbelievable is an understatement. And by the way, just Johnny Valente, owner of Birdland,
yeah,
good friend, and he does the intro
of
the band on the live recording.
That's right.
Album.
That's right.
We actually opened the show with that. So,
okay. Very cool.
You're hearing in the intro of this show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So 60 years later, Scotty, you guys decided to do another recording, another Count Basie Orchestra recording at Birdland 60 years later. Can you tell us a little bit about the night, what you know of the first recording, and then what was you were over, you guys played over 4 nights, right? And this is
that's right,
January of last year. It was last year, right?
Yeah. Last year,
COVID was days away.
That's right. Well, you know, the original recording is obviously one of my favorites. All of the guys love it and everybody loves it, and I just knew the main goal going into the recording that we just did, like the new one, is that we had to meet or exceed what was on that recording. And I think we definitely met what was on there when it comes to swing, when it comes to excitement, when it comes to the soloists. And in some certain instances, I think we exceeded too. But the thing was, I knew, you know, for the last 8 years or 7 years at that time that I had been leading the orchestra, I knew. And the guys in the orchestra knew, nobody in the world is playing how we play, man. Nobody's playing like that. I'm sorry, man. No other big band in the world is doing what we are doing, the way that we are doing it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we knew that, and I knew that. I'm like, man, we've got to be recorded live how we normally play, with a normal regular set, with, you know, no big special things, just how we play, and also capturing how the audience reacts to it. And I knew we had to do that, and Birdland was the perfect place to do that. We were there 5 nights, actually. The first night, I didn't record anything. We just played and kind of worked out some kinks on a new arrangement or two. Then we started recording the second night. And I told the guys, I said, look, man, we're not overdubbing anything. Whatever happens is going to happen. You guys, and I introduced them this way every single night. They're the greatest jazz orchestra in the world. I introduced them like that every single night. And I said, all you got to do is just be yourselves, man. Just play. Have a good time. We're laughing. On every tune, something happens. We're laughing. I'm smiling. You know, it's not this old series. Oh, we got to get this note. No, man, just play. We've been playing this music long enough now that we can have fun with it.
Yeah.
And really just have fun. And that's what we did. So we recorded over 4 nights. And I just programmed enough. I programmed enough music so we had at least three shots at every tune, three takes. You know, so I could go back when we were mixing it, I could find the best take. And that's what I did. I just took the best take, no overdubbing whatsoever, none of that. So what you hear is exactly what happened. And if you listen really closely, you might hear something, wait a minute, was that right? But what is we human? Things happen. But they were on fire, man. Yeah. I mean, it was, it was incredible. And so I'm so glad that we got this recorder, and it could not have come at a better time when people are yearning and dying for live music again.
Yeah.
Especially after what we just went through, and it seems like we're going through again, but it's just it's perfect timing for it. And we're going to be back at Birdland in a couple of weeks and, performing this music that we have live. And I just can't wait for people to hear it, to really hear what it sounds like to have one of the most important orchestras in the world still at the top of its game 87 years after it started. That's incredible to me. It really is. I have to think about it. So I'm like, man, that's crazy, man. And you can close your eyes, and just listen with your ears. You can listen to 2 seconds, oh, that's Basie. Yeah. You didn't even have to wonder, but what band is that? You didn't have to go there. Oh, that's Count Basie. And that's another testament to him, to his genius and what he left us. And I'm just trying to protect it and preserve it. And he, for the next person after me, and hopefully they'll do the same thing. 300 years from now, somebody else will be doing, your great-great-grandkids will be doing another interview with somebody about this music.
Scotty, how many other orchestras or bands that you know of? You mentioned the Philharmonic, but how many are out there that have lasted the test of time and time and are still, like the Count Basie Orchestra?
Well, the Duke Ellington Orchestra is still sort of around, but they don't really travel that much anymore. And you have to travel in order to keep relevant and to keep, people aware of what's going on. I wish they would travel more because I've done a few tours with them. I've been in that band. Of course, we have Lincoln Center now, but they're new. They're just getting started. And I think some members of the Lionel Hampton Orchestra have begun to travel more with them, with Jason Marsalis on the vibes out front. So they have the original book. They're playing that book too. So, it's not, and it's the Glenn Miller Orchestra, obviously, is still going. But it's hard, man, to continue to do that if the estate, number one, of that particular person doesn't want it. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it could be an estate issue. But with us, Mr. Basie said that, he wanted the orchestra to keep going because the guys wanted to keep going. And they buried him one day, had a big, huge funeral for him in Harlem. Everybody was there. Next day, the band's back on the plane on the road and stopped. And I just think that we are very lucky to be recipients, the beneficiaries of what he left us.
Yeah.
The way he thought about music, the way he knew his band should sound. And when people hear it for the first time, their lives are transformed, like mine was. When I first heard it, I was, oh, my God, are you kidding me? What? Oh, my God. So to be in it for 28 years, but to have been, I've been listening to it. I'm 56. I've been listening to it since I was 9 years old, 7 or 8, basically. And I'm the luckiest guy in the world, man.
We are talking to the luckiest guy in the world, but who works very, very hard to continue the beautiful tradition of the Count Basie Orchestra. Scotty Barnhart, he's the director of the Count Basie Orchestra. You can find him at Scotty and email him at Scotty@thecountbasieorchestra.com. Also find him on scottybarnhart.com. On Facebook, the legendary Count Basie Orchestra. On Instagram, at Count Basie Official. And on Twitter at Count Basie Orc, which is basically orchestra, but O-R-C-H. The new album is the Count Basie Orchestra, directed by Scotty Barnhart. It's called Live at Birdland, 60 years later from the original. We'll be right back with more Scotty Barnhart. And Adam Phillips is going to take over the show and spend a little time. orchestra leader to orchestra leader here. The Count Basie Orchestra, Live at Birdland on Candid Records, is set for release next September 17th and is now available for pre-order on Amazon. In January of 2020, the Count Basie Orchestra, directed by Scotty Barnhart, recorded over four nights at the famed Birdland Jazz Club in New York City. August 21 was Count Basie's birthday, and we can't think of a better way to honor him than to play his music for you and for you to pick up the new album. Available, again, September 17th on Candid Records and available for pre-order now by going to amazon.com/Birdland-Count-Basie-Orchestra. The last Live at Birdland recording was released exactly 60 years ago, 1961. The orchestra was on fire and swinging as always, and it's all captured live. We are thrilled for you all to hear this fabulously swinging two CD set that features everyone in the orchestra at least once, and also the outstanding and stellar vocalists Carmen Bradford and Jamie Davis. Got another special guest on this two CD set, guest drummer Butch Miles. Again, the Count Basie Orchestra live at Birdland is out September 17th on Candid Records. Pre-order your copy now on Amazon.
Hi there, everybody. This is Ann Hitch, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. We are Ann
and Heather,
and we are better together.
Just waiting to be shaken, and only the young don't care what tomorrow may bring. Today is a miracle. Sunny green time, I'll hold you and love you every day.
My name's Danny Trejo, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. And on it, I'm talking about my cookbook, Awesome. I got a documentary coming out, a record called Satisfy My Soul. Check it out. Trejo's music, Jeremiah, you're loved, Holmes.
The Jeremiah Show, your show to hear the best new music and exclusive artist interviews. You won't hear personal interviews like these anywhere else.
Hi, this is Johnny Valenti. I'm the owner of Birdland Jazz Club in New York City. For nearly four decades, going dark during the global pandemic taught me how important the arts, especially music, are to each of our cultures and our health. Musicians literally bring life and joy to our daily lives. Radio shows that support musicians and music, like The Jeremiah Show, are so important in keeping music alive. I hope that you will keep listening and supporting musicians. Please support the music. And please come and visit me at Birdland when you're in New York City. Thank you.
Every honeybee fills with jealousy when they see you out with me. I don't mind them, goodness knows. You're my honeysuckle rose. When you're passing by, flowers droop and sigh, and I know the reason why. Your confection, goodness knows, you're my honeysuckle rose. Don't buy sugar, you just have to touch my cup, 'cause you're my sugar. You're so when you stir it up, drip, drip from your lips. You're my honeysuckle rose.
Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. We have a very special guest today on the show, Scotty Barnhart. He leads and is the director of the Count Basie Orchestra. We've also got Adam Phillips here, my co-host, who's been patiently waiting to ask some questions of Scotty. Welcome back, Adam. Adam Phillips, remind everybody at Santa Barbara here, is the founder and the music director for the Folk Orchestra Santa Barbara. I'm going to turn the show over to you, Adam, and I can't wait to hear your questions and answers from Scotty Barnhart.
So, Scotty, I love and have loved hearing you just talk about Count Basie and talk about this orchestra, because as you're talking about it, it feels like you're living it. And you're just so enraptured with it, and it has made me feel that too. And so I'm just so excited. I'm just sitting here in awe listening to you talk. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Yeah. So I have a question. How do you feel or specifically the Count Basie's music, what do you think that has to offer today's audiences, and where does it fit? Obviously, when you listen to the music and you get even someone who hasn't listened to a lot of jazz, there's the pure joy element of it that I just love and I know you love. But what do you think it has to offer, say, to the teenagers and the 20-year-olds that are listening to electronic music? How do you feel about that, and how do you feel about how it's connecting?
Well, I think it's what it offers is what it's always offered from day one, and that's a combination of things. Perpetual optimism. You know, we've gone through this pandemic right now, and you put on a Basie record, man, it makes you feel like, okay, everything's going to be cool. It's going to take a little minute, but everything's going to be all right. You know, that's what I get from it. Mm-hmm. Anytime I want to feel good, if I'm in a little bit of a funk or depressed or upset about something, I put on a Basie record, I'm immediately out of it, which is why in my phone for my alarm when I wake up every morning, I wake up to Basie, man. I find like one of my favorite tracks, and you put it in an iPhone, you know, you can put any, it'll wake you up to a tune. That's what I wake up to, because as soon as I hear those chords and Basie playing, I say, oh, yeah, we're good. You know, it can be Basie and Sinatra, it can be Basie, whatever, but yeah. So that's what he offers, man. This music offers a real reminder that no matter what's going on in the world, man, you know, it bad things always pass. They do. There's always light at the end of the tunnel. The sun, you know, somebody mentioned, I saw another, like a meme or something that was basically saying, even on a cloudy day, the sun is shining. It's just on the other side of the clouds. You just got to get through the clouds. You know, so Basie's music is like, it just makes you feel good, man. And I can't, I mean, listening to it is one thing, but playing it and making it, when we're all together, I can't even describe that feeling. I just can't, it's out of body. I'm dead serious. When we're on the stage, and when it really starts swinging, and oh my god, it's like we're different beings or something. I can't really explain it. When we all come together like that, and it happens just about every night, pretty much every night. Yeah. So Basie, man, when he found out where that right tempo was and where to put that right note on the and of four here or and of whatever there, when he figured that out, that's why his orchestra's doing what it's doing. And that's why I know the orchestra can do it the way that we do it. And I try to teach it when I'm working with the orchestra. I can show them where the notes are, where the rhythms are. But you have to understand how to approach it even. So we don't even, the last thing I say about it is that we don't even play things how they look on the music. So when a new guy comes in, he'll be reading how he normally would read in another orchestra. But that's not what we're doing. So once we explain what we're doing, how we ship things this way, that bit, that way, a little bit, we ship it. Once he finds that, it's like shooting at a basketball goal and the goal is totally moving. You imagine that? If the NBA, if they changed the rules and now the goals are moving and you got to try to make a shot in that, that's what it's like reading with us for the first time.
Yeah.
But Basie's music, back to the original answer, makes you feel good.
So. Yeah. Awesome. So you mentioned a new guy. What is the process for finding new musicians? If you ever have, when you have positions open up, or do you have like a long waiting list of guys who are like, please let me into the orchestra? Or,
There are no auditions per se. What happens is that if a guy is getting ready to leave, they simply recommend who they think can come in and fill the chair on day one. And usually that line of people for every chair are people that have already played with us before, that are sub with us, so they know what to expect, they know how to play, they know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And very rarely does somebody join the orchestra who's never ever played with us. That's very, very rare.
Yeah.
But so that's how it happens. If somebody, you know, third trombone player or whomever, a trumpet player can't make it, we'll already know in my mind too, in the guys, who we can call right away that can come in and do a recording on the first day or do Carnegie Hall on the first day without messing up. That's how we do that. So I tell young musicians all the time, man, make sure you are developing your sight reading skills to the utmost, because that is really how you get in an orchestra like this and stay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to mean, you know, obviously we want great soloists too, but if you can't read, you can't play with us.
Yeah.
It just won't happen. So, but that's how that works. We don't send out a list and looking for people. We do have a list of people that we start with. And luckily we do have a list that we can kind of choose exactly who we want. And there are guys that are waiting, you know, I've met guys over the years, you know, okay, something comes up, I'll call you. You know, I got guys in my mind, and women too, you know, not just all guys. And we just try to get the best people that we can. And it goes beyond the music. You have to be a nice person. You have to be able to get along with people. You have to be professional. You got to be on.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You got to be on time.
I want people that I can go get a drink with or have a cup of coffee with. And then I want a really good player.
Exactly right. So people that know. Yeah, people know how to be on time to the airport. You'd be surprised. We've had to fire somebody that couldn't even catch planes, man. I'm not exaggerating. What? Are you kidding me? You can't be at the airport? How are you going to do it? How are you going to deal with that, man? So we've had to, you know, it's all facets of it's, being professional is a lot of things. It's not just playing well. It's a list of things, man, that you got to have. And if you don't have them, that person is not going to be good for your organization. It's just that simple. So luckily, everyone that we have in the orchestra is a great person to get along with. They're on time. They know how to act on the bandstand as well as off the bandstand. Because again, once we leave our homes and go on tour, we are no longer John Doe and Mike Doe. We are members of the Count Basie Orchestra. So if something were to happen, Mr. Basie's name is going to be mentioned first, not their name. And I had to remind him of that sometimes. I only had to do that maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
And so it's a great responsibility, man. But that's how we get people in an orchestra. We have a list of people that we start with.
Do you have an ideal size, or do you have like a specific historical guideline of how many players you have?
Yeah, it's the same right now as it's always been. You know, 17 musicians, 4 trumpets, 4 trombones, 5 saxes, piano, bass, drums, guitar, and a vocalist, and the conductor, me.
Yeah.
So it's been that size since Basie added a fourth trombone around 1962 or 3. And up till then, it was 3 trombones and 4 trumpets. When they first started, I think it was 3 trumpets, 2 trombones, and 4 saxes. As a matter of fact, a lot of people don't know this, but you know, the standard formation now for a big band is 5 saxophones. Mm-hmm. And Basie started that. Because when he first heard Lester Young, he was like, I got to get that guy in my orchestra, but I can't fire the lead, the tenor player that I already have. I can't fire him. But I got to get him in my orchestra. So what he did was he hired Lester Young, and he sat him right next to the guy who was already on tenor named Buddy Tate. But because Buddy Tate and Lester Young's styles were so night and day, so different, and Lester Young had a light, airy, almost a flute-like quality to his tenor, whereas Buddy Tate had a Texas tenor honking kind of in your face, bar hopping kind of sound, you know, so to speak. Buddy Tate went to Basie and said, look, man, I can't sit next to this cat. I can't play next to him. What are you doing? So you know what Basie did? Instead of firing Lester, he simply moved him over to the end, which created what we call the split tenors. So now when you see a big band, the tenor saxophones are not together. It's tenor, then 2 altos, then the other tenor, then the Barry. Basie started that. simply to separate his tenor player.
The Count Basie Orchestra. The new album is out on in September, September 27th, I believe, and you can pre-order it right now on Amazon. So go do that. It's Count Basie Orchestra live at Birdland on Candid Records, released September 17th. You are playing, the Count Basie Orchestra is playing at Birdland again coming up in September, right, Scotty?
That's right, September 14th through 18th, five nights.
Get your tickets now. Go online. Got a special offer from Johnny Valente, owner of Birdland. He wanted me to extend to all the listeners on this episode. So when we come back from break, I'm going to give that special out to you for when you're buying tickets. And hang tight. We'll be right back. Scotty Barnhart.
All right.
Basie Orchestra. We'll be right back after the short break.
Hello, this is Adam Phillips, the founder and music director of Folk Orchestra Santa Barbara. We are excited to announce that we have our Scottish concerts coming up on October 16th and 17th at 5 p.m. at the beautiful Casa de la Guerra in downtown Santa Barbara. Tickets are going on sale via our website, www.folkorchestrasb.com, and they've been selling out. And we are so happy to get back to playing together again. So thanks for listening to The Jeremiah Show, and we'll see you on October 16th and 17th.
This is The Daniel Emmett Show. I've stolen this moment from our host, Jeremiah. He's asked me to give you the title of the song, E vuole questa musica stasera, and that is a song that I fell in love with when I heard it for the first time, used in the soundtrack of the movie The Man from U.N.C.L.E., back, I believe it was in the mid-2010s, and just had to record it, and it is going to be a part of my upcoming album releasing later this year.
This is Miles Copeland. Yeah, I just had the honor of speaking to the Jeremiah Show. Who would have believed that little old me would have the opportunity to speak on such a prestigious show? And they even talked about my book, my memoir, Two Steps Forward, One Step Back, My Life in the Music Business. So it was a great pleasure to be on that show, the Jeremiah Show.
The Jeremiah Show, the only place to hear the Mike Gormley host interview series, bringing you iconic music business managers, musicians, and the players who have created your favorite music from 1960 to the 2000s. Find all of Mike's past interviews in the Jeremiah Show music catalog on thejeremiahshow.com or your favorite podcast sites. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. We have a very special guest today on the show, Scotty Barnhart. He leads and is the director of the Count Basie Orchestra. We've also got Adam Phillips here, my co-host.
Do you try and find tenor sax players with those contrasting styles still?
No, not necessarily, no. We just try to find the best people that know how to play the blues. I can play quartet as well. We don't really care if they fall into either one of those categories. Like Doug Lawrence that we have right now, he sounds like Dexter Gordon. He doesn't sound like Frank Foss. Doesn't sound like Lester Young. Doesn't sound like Buddy Tate. Doesn't sound like Frank West. He sounds like Dexter Gordon. You know, can you hear a little bit of the other guys in there? But no, we don't necessarily go for someone who has a very specific sound. We just go for, you know, if they really want to play in the orchestra, let them bring their sound with them. Mm-hmm. You know, and if they know how to play a blues a certain way, I have to mention that. They have to know how to play the blues a certain way. There's a certain way that our soloists, Basie soloists, have traditionally played the blues. And it's a very definitive, or a very deliberate way of playing. Like when Snooky Young, great lead trumpet player, would play a blues on the trumpet, he would sound totally different from Thad Jones. Those are two totally different people. But they're very deliberate in how they play. It's hard to kind of explain, but Basie always had varied soloists. They didn't all sound the same. So you could take a record like Birdland, 1961. If every one of the saxophone players took a solo, they're all going to sound different. Same with the trombone player. You got Al Green, you know, Benny Powell. Those two totally different players. Trumpet section, you know, at that time on that record, Lenny Johnson on lead. You know, versus, you know, Joe Newman, whomever it may have been, two totally different people. So I don't look for a very specific way that they sound other than how they approach and have a reverence for the blues. That's really what I'm trying to say. They have to have a reverence for it and understand. Yeah.
Nice. Do you have any, when you're programming a concert, do you have, which pieces are the ones that you consider the must-haves in every program?
Well, we have to do April in Paris because we'll get run out of town if we don't do that. And but what's funny though is that I try to keep that as an encore piece.
Yeah.
Because playing something every night for anybody, you can get bored half to death. I don't care how great it is. So I don't want to ever bore the guys with anything that we do.
Yeah.
So I try to spread things out. And there have been nights where we didn't play it and nobody got mad at us or called us. Oh, you didn't play it, you know.
Yeah.
But every once in a while we'll get that. You didn't play this, you didn't play that, anything, you know. So you can't please everybody, but April in Paris is one that'll find its way there, of course. Now, 1 o'clock Jump, that's our theme song. We play that at the end of every set. So that's a given.
Yeah.
And we play a tune called Basie, which is like our tour de force. We always end every set with that. I mean, the last tune before we play the theme song. So Basie usually makes it there. There's another tune called Blues and Hosses Flat or Blues and Frankie's Flat. That's probably one of the most important pieces in this orchestra's history. That one tune, the way that it's written and the way that we play it, and certain tunes I've taken and I've stretched out a little bit to allow the pianist to just take a little bit longer of solo, you know, that kind of thing, stretch out a little longer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say April in Paris, Blues and Hosses Flat, Basie, sometimes Little Darling. There's some nights we don't play Little Darling because we do have other ballads that we try to play. So I try to have on one night, if you hear us on a Tuesday, and you come back again and hear us on Wednesday, you'll probably hear about half or maybe a third of what you heard the night before.
Yeah.
But there's going to be some other stuff that you haven't heard yet.
Yeah.
And that keeps the musicians interested. That keeps us on our toes. That keeps the overall level of interest there. I'll never program two sets, two identical sets in the same night in a row. I'll never do that. Just can't. Well, you know, even if I had the same tunes, I switch them around. At least they wouldn't be in the same order, you know. But I try to make sure that everyone in the orchestra over a few days is featured at least once. So if we play Little Darling one night for the ballad, the next night we're going to play something that's going to feature somebody else. The next night we're going to play something that's featured somebody else, and we run out of that, then we can go back to Little Darling. Unless we get a request for it. Now, that happens. I've had greatly prepared set list, man, me ready to play, and I'll get a note. Can you play this? Like, okay. And I try to accommodate them. You know what I mean? I don't like to not do that. And so I do try to accommodate people that are familiar with certain things over the years, and we try to play it. But I just try to keep it fresh and and mixed, you know, mixed up a little bit.
Getting back to your the new album, you know, in my mind I was thinking, I was like, I want to know like what your process was for getting ready for that recording. But you guys were just, you were in your stride, right? When you went to do the Birdland recording, you guys been doing shows, been touring, and you just did your thing over the course of those nights. So, and probably as you were just saying, did you have kind of, you probably had different sets each of those four nights you were recording, and some of them were the same and some of them, so you were just doing your thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, none of the sets were identical.
Yeah.
We had, I mean, so you figured we had four nights, so that's eight sets I had to program.
Yeah.
And I still have them listed, and I have them in my documents, because I always email the guys, either I print them out and put them on everybody's stand, or I email everybody so they could see what we're playing in their phone, you know, but we were already on tour, and so again we didn't have to do anything special other than rehearse a couple of the new vocal charts that we were going to record, because one of the vocal things that we did, which was a duet, the original version of it was Carmen Bradford with George Benson on this record that Benson did with the band called Big Boss Band back in 1985. So Carmen and George did a duet on this really beautiful tune called How Do You Keep the Music Playing. So when we had Jamie Davis, when we knew we were going to have Jamie there, I thought, you know what, you guys should do that duet, because that'll be great to do it live. But we had it was going to be in a different key. It needed to be in a different key. So I got one of the former guys in the orchestra who was great at, I sent him the music from the original one, and he put it in the computer and lowered the key down and sent us the parts back, and we recorded. So we had to go over that. But other than that, we didn't really have to go over too many things, man. It just, because we were always playing. And again, every night, but when I did look at the set list, I did refer to the original Birdland recording to make sure we would play certain things so you can come, so the historians can compare what they did in 1960, what we did with this recent one, how do they sound, all these, you know. So there are a few things that did carry over. One of those tunes would be I Needs to Be Beat With, the Quincy Jones tune. Another one would be Whirly Birds. And the difference in Whirly Birds, it's a really up-tempo tune that features tenor saxophone and then drums at the end. But on the original Live at Birdland recording, when Basie did it in 1960, instead of a tenor saxophone solo, the great vocalist John Hendricks, he scattered a solo. And so what I thought we would do, and it just so happens it worked out that way, our baritone saxophone player, that's now his solo feature. Because I didn't know how great of a soloist was. He was a new guy, and I didn't really know how great he was until I heard him. I was like, oh, my God, that's your solo from now on. So not only did we do Whirly Birds again, we have a different soloist other than the tenor player. So, But I think, like I said, man, I really do think we met or exceeded what had happened 60 years ago in several instances. And, again, I've been listening to it every day, and I never get tired of listening to it, man. It's just, I mean, it is swing. Oh, my God. It's swinging. The cats are relaxed and loose. The audience, you know, is really into it. And we just do it. We're just doing what we do.
Scotty.
You know, I'm so glad we have it captured.
Do you think, Scotty, knowing what was coming, the pandemic, days away, do you think?
Well, we didn't know. We didn't even know. No, at that time, the week of January 15th through 18th, we weren't even thinking about any of that.
What
it, didn't think anything up, seriously.
Would it have changed the recording?
Say it again.
The album live at
Say it again. Now.
Would it have changed if you would have known, if it would have been a little bit further? Would it have changed the mood, the tempo, the feel of the recording at all, do you think?
I don't think so as a whole. Probably not as a whole. Maybe individually guys may have been thinking about it, but no, I mean, I think back to that. I remember some things about it on the news a little bit, but it wasn't so in our face every day. You know, we kind of, you look at the news and, okay, there's things, this thing going on about, you know. But when we were there, man, that was nowhere in the room on anybody's mind. We were just trying to have a good time and play our sets and make sure I ended right at 75 minutes. You know what I mean? Instead of 76, 74. That's what I'm thinking. Okay, we got to know. Make sure we... You know, because they got to change the house. We were thinking those things. We weren't thinking anything about the pandemic. And so that could be why it has such a positive quality to it. There wasn't this legion of doom in front of, like, oh, my God, what's about to happen? you know, maybe it would have been a different recording had we known that things would have been shut down completely and people, friends of ours, would be dead within months, because a lot of them were. Ellis Marsalis, Wallace Roney. Those guys were dead within 4 or 5 months, man. Had we known that, yeah, we probably would have played different. We definitely probably would have played differently, I'm sure. Probably with more urgency.
Yeah.
You know, but there's always a sense of urgency in what we do anyway. You know, when you really listen to it, you can hear it. It's relaxed. But there's a sense of, you know, you can kind of hear, okay, what's next? Where are we going? Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, but I'm glad that we didn't have that hanging over our heads in that club, because the audience would have bought it in with them too.
Right.
And the whole room would have turned into this, whatever it may have been, you know, but everybody was carefree. Everybody was hugging each other. Everybody high-fiving, hey man, how you been? What's up? Everybody staying, having drinks. Everybody having fun. A friend of mine even bought down some banana pudding that she made for the band. You know, we were having a good time, man. People coming in from out of town. And I was teaching. The funny thing, that week, I was an artist in residence at Juilliard that week. So I was teaching at Juilliard during the day and then playing the club at night. And the last night that we played, a Saturday night, I had a commitment at Juilliard because I was conducting their jazz band there and a concert. So I couldn't make our first set. And I knew that was going to happen 2 or 3 months before that. So I had John Faddis to come down and sub for me. I could say, Faddis, man, can you go down and run the set, you know? And he did. Oh, wait a minute. There we go. And so, yeah, everybody was just fun, having fun. And there wasn't any indication whatsoever about something that is devastating that was about to happen. None. We just...
You know, one of the things that I really loved about the recording was the audience reacting and from applause to laughter to energy.
That's right, man. It's real, man. It's real. It's exactly what happened. The only thing I kind of regret now, and we could have done this, we could have made a DVD out of it. We could have had a film crew there to record it. We actually could have done that. It just would have added a lot more to the budget, and I don't want to deal with all that again, but we could have done it. But it's actually good that you can drive in your car. You can be listening to, you can hear somebody's glass fork hitting the plate, and somebody, you know, yelling Count Basie, or somebody making a little comment, or the student. And those people that were hooting and hollering, those are college students. That's what I meant to mention, because there was a college band, jazz band convention going on at Juilliard as well. So all of these bands just packed a club, man, from all these different schools. And one of our saxophone players, his alma mater, Michigan State, they were in there one night, and they went nuts. I mean, they were just, I mean, everything we played, they just lost, because they never saw us before. And they didn't, not only that, but their former student, their friend in the band playing with us. Oh, man. So, you know, we just play two notes and they go to screaming, ah! So it was fun to play for a bunch of enthusiastic young musicians as well as the longtime fans of the orchestra. So that mix is what makes this recording really, really special.
Back to Adam, you know, in the beginning, the first question I think Adam asked about being relevant and what and the Count Basie Orchestra, you know, how does it translate to the kids today? But, you know, look at all these great vocalists, these great artists, these visionaries now in today's date in the music business who are borrowing from jazz and who are bringing jazz to their recordings. I mean, the list is long. It's very sampled and very relevant still today, and it almost has a whole new life. So we do need to take a break, and unfortunately, we've kept you for so long. We're going to have to say goodbye. Okay. We've got Adam Phillips of the Folk Orchestra of Santa Barbara asking the really tough questions. Questions of our special guest today, Scotty Barnhart. The Count Basie Orchestra. The new album is out on in September 27th, I believe, and you can pre-order it right now on Amazon. So go do that. It's Count Basie Orchestra Live at Birdland on Candid Records, released September 17th. You are playing, the Count Basie Orchestra is playing at Birdland again coming up in September, right? Scotty?
That's right. September 14th through 18th. Five nights.
Get your tickets now. Go online. Yeah. got a special offer from Johnny Valente, owner of Birdland. He wanted me to extend to all the listeners on this episode. So when we come back from break, I'm going to give that special out to you for when you're buying tickets. And, cool. Hang tight. We'll be right back. Scotty, Barnhart.
All right.
Basie Orchestra. We'll be right back after the short break.
Hello, this is Adam Phillips, the founder and music director of Folk Orchestra Santa Barbara. We are excited to announce that we have our Scottish concerts coming up on October 16th and 17th at 5 p.m. at the beautiful Casa de la Guerra in downtown Santa Barbara. Tickets are going on sale via our website, www.folkorchestrasb.com, and they've been selling out, and we are so happy to get back to playing together again. So thanks for listening to The Jeremiah Show, and we'll see you on October 16th and 17th.
Hey, everybody. I'm Art Alex Hux from the band Everclear, and we're going to be on tour this summer on the Summerland Tour 2021 with Everclear, Living Color, Hoobastank, and Wheatus. Hope to see you guys out there. Take care.
Cam Anthony here. Make sure you find me on Spotify, where you can find all of my latest music. And make sure you tune in to The Jeremiah Show.
Check out The Jeremiah Show Facebook and YouTube pages for exclusive videos of our Jeremiah Show guest interviews.
Welcome back to The Jeremiah Show. We spent the hour, such a great hour, such a short hour with Scotty Barnhart. He's the director of the Count Basie Orchestra, telling some really great stories about Count Basie, the band, the orchestra, and the new live album, which is coming out. We're also joined, my co-host today is Adam Phillips, Folk Orchestra of Santa Barbara. Adam, you've got one more question that you just have to burning a hole.
Hi, this is a
morning mind here for Scotty Barnhart.
The presidents of the United States have the secret, the book of secrets that is handed down to them as they take over their 4 years.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite unknown Count Basie story that you could share with us that's been handed down to you? Totally.
I can tell this one. Yeah, it's a true story, too, because this is one that comes to mind. So back around 1970 or so, you know, Basie was fully entrenched in his fame. Everybody knew who he was. He had been in movies and was about to be in more movies with Blazing Saddles later on. And so everywhere they went, you know, he was a superstar, you know, basically. So one day the orchestra was in Detroit, Michigan. They were checking into a hotel in Detroit. And they had checked into the hotel, but Basie was still standing out in front of the hotel just enjoying a cigar right in front of the door, some big fancy hotel. He just standing there, but, you know, he wore his captain's cap, you know, the captain's cap he would wear. So he's standing there smoking a cigar, and a taxi cab pulls up, and these two women got out. They're elderly women, like in their 70s, 80s, something like that, dressed, you know, very rich and wealthy. You could tell they're very wealthy. And so they get out, the taxi driver gets their luggage out and puts it right down in front of them. And so they didn't even look at their luggage. They walk straight over to Mr. Basie and said, "Okay, sonny, you can grab the bags, follow us." So a couple of guys in the band were standing there. They were like, "Oh, my God, is he going to do this?" Basie didn't flinch. He reached out. He picked up the ladies' bags. He follows them in the hotel to the elevator. And the guys who are out there watching this, they couldn't believe what they were watching because they had no idea who he was. So he followed them onto the elevator. He got on the elevator. The door closed. And the guys were like, "Man, are you watching this?" So a few minutes later, Basie comes back down and gets up the elevator. He walks back. And all the guys are just standing there waiting to see what he's going to say. So he walks back out there. He fires the cigar back up and starts smoking a cigar. And they said, "Okay, now, Basie, what happened?" He said, "Well, I took their luggage to the room and they gave me a quarter. What else was I supposed to do?" That's a true story, man. They gave him a quarter. That was Count Basie that toted their luggage to their room. They gave him a quarter. He bowed. "Thank you, man." And went on back down. So, yeah, that's a true story.
Great story. Yeah. Scotty Barnhart, director, Count Basie Orchestra, a new album, Live at Birdland.
Yes.
Final words. Who would you like to thank? I'm sure the list is long. What would you like our listeners to do? And
oh, man. Well, look, first of all, it's a great recording. I thank Johnny Valente, of course, for having us there at Birdland, and thank all of the musicians, but of course, thank Mr. Basie. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for him. So, Mr. Basie, if you don't have any Count Basie Orchestra recordings, get all of them. Just go on Amazon and order, click on them, I'll get all of them from 1936, 37, all the way up to our latest. But our latest basically encapsulates all that happened, all the previous 86 years or 85 years. And we play things from 1935 all the way up to our latest. Newest arrangement, I think, was done maybe in 2019, 18 or 19, something like that. And it's just a great representation of what the history of the orchestra represents. We're playing the blues. We're playing at all different tempos. Everybody in the orchestra is featured at least once. I mean, everyone is. Everybody's a soloist. So everybody gets to stretch out and play. And have our great vocalist, Carmen Bradford, who was the last vocalist that Mr. Basie hired before he died in 1984. He hired her in 1983. So she's there. She sounds wonderful. The great Jamie Davis, who's a bass baritone out of the Joe Williams School. He does a couple of Joe Williams things that are classics, like 5 o'clock in the morning, that could only be done with this orchestra. There are certain things that are associated with us. So there's something for everyone there. If you're new to jazz, there's something on there you like. If you've been listening to the orchestra for all 87 years, there are things you're definitely going to love. So there's something for everyone. And so definitely order it, you know, and if you can work out some kind of way where they can get one or get it to me, I'll be glad to autograph a few and get them back to you somehow. So, you know, we just, you know, the music is for you. It's for the people. It's for the world. It's not just for us. We love making it. We love it and you enjoy playing it. But it's for you to help make your lives better and bring some light and joy into your lives. And so that's what it's about.
I love it. And do what Scotty Barnhart does. Put a Count Basie song on your alarm for when you wake up. You'll be in a mood all day, right?
Yeah, man, absolutely right. Absolutely right.
All right, I want to thank our top listeners, top countries, and top cities real quick here. Daniel Sotana, Azo, Constantine, Massage for the Soul. Top countries are the good old US of A, number two, Ireland, Spain, and Sweden, and the Czech Republic. Our top cities. I lost my top city, so I don't know, but I'm sure you're out there listening. Santa Barbara better be number one. We've been number four for a while, so since we're broadcasting from Santa Barbara, I want to see that as the number one city. I thank all you listeners and joining us today. Next week, we've got the Anne Heche film series. We go behind the curtain with legendary actor Anne Heche and discuss 11 of her best film performances with De Niro and Depp and Harrison Ford. And we've got rapper DK. He returns to the show. Okay, here's a little I teased you with. Johnny Valente, owner of Birdland, New York City. He's been, the club has opened and closed and been through the pandemic. Got the album Live at Birdland. We've been talking with Scotty Barnhart all hour about Count Basie Orchestra. That was probably one of the last shows, close to last shows and performances, and definitely probably the last live performance recording at Birdland in New York City. He's reopened. If you're in New York, I know we've got a lot of listeners in New York. Go this weekend and support Birdland. He's got a little gift for you, to you know, for all of our listeners at the Jeremiah Show. So here, it was Charlie the Bird Parker's birthday a couple days ago. August, he was born on August 29th, 1920. So join us at Birdland Tuesday, August 31st. That is tonight for the podcast listeners. September through September 4th for the Strada East 50th anniversary celebration with the Charles Tolliver Quintet. When Charles Tolliver and the late Stanley Kell co-founded Strada East in 1971, their only goal was to put out their own work and release their own work. Before long, though, they found themselves in charge of one of the era's leading jazz labels and a lasting symbol of artistic independence. So come celebrate Strada East All-Stars 50th anniversary with Charles Tolliver. He plays trumpet, Billy Harper on sax, George Cables on piano, Buster Williams on bass, Lenny White on drums. You can purchase tickets at birdlandjazz.com. And put in, here's the special, you get 50% off tickets for Jeremiah Show listeners by using the promo code Parker101. Again, that promo code's Parker101. Grand reopening of the Birdland Theater. Join us for the lineup with Susie Mauscher, Augie Haas Quartet, Ashley Pizzotti Quartet, and Connie Hahn Trio. And, of course, see Birdland later this month. Looks like we may have lost Scotty. So, Scotty, if we lost you out there, you're back at the piano or you're leading the orchestra. Long may you run, my friend. Adam Phillips, Folk Orchestra Santa Barbara, thank you so much for joining us. Great questions, Adam.
Thanks.
You can co-host with me anytime. I love it. All right, everybody, have a great week. Communicate, listen more, and evolve. The Count Basie Orchestra, live at Birdland on Candid Records, is set for release next September 17th and is now available for pre-order on Amazon. In January of 2020, the Count Basie Orchestra, directed by Scotty Barnhart, recorded over four nights at the famed Birdland Jazz Club in New York City. August 21 was Count Basie's birthday, and we can't think of a better way to honor him than to play his music for you and for you to pick up the new album. Available, again, September 17th on Candid Records and available for pre-order now by going to amazon.com/Birdland-Count-Basie-Orchestra. The last Live at Birdland recording was released exactly 60 years ago, 1961. The orchestra was on fire and swinging as always, and it's all captured live. We are thrilled for you all to hear this fabulously swinging 2-CD set that features everyone in the orchestra at least once, and also the outstanding and stellar vocalists Carmen Bradford and Jamie Davis.
Show and Alvin Walker.
You've been listening to The Jeremiah Show. I am Miles Zuniga from Fastball, and you can find me every Tuesday at 7 p.m. at facebook.com/MilesZunigaLovesYou. I do a live stream. I'd love to see you there. Thank you.
Hi, this is comedian Maz Chobrani, and you are listening to The Jeremiah Show on AM 1290 KZSB Santa Barbara. Listen, man.
Do you need help with your restaurant or hospitality business? See how we can help your business at hjlrestaurantadvisors.com. Check out our website at thejeremiahshow.com. We are on SoundCloud. Please subscribe on iTunes, podcast The Jeremiah Show. Did you like our soundtrack? Find all of our soundtracks on Spotify, The Jeremiah Show. As always, a big thanks to Dr. D for making our voices come alive on the airwaves, and to our station manager, Les Carroll, for letting us on the airwaves at all. Be sure to check out our very own Richard Dr. D. Dugan's Peabody Award-nominated radio show, Tell Me Your Story, every Sunday at 7 a.m. and again at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening to The Jeremiah Show with Dr. D. Listeners, we appreciate you and want to hear from you. Please send us your ideas
at thejeremiahshow.com. Follow us on Instagram at The Real Jeremiah Show.
The Jeremiah Show is produced by executive producer Jeremiah Higgins and sound engineer Richard Dr. D. Dugan. Have a great rest of your week, everyone.
Communicate. Listen more. Evolve.
They were beautiful. The most beautiful sky has ever.